They left. Through the opening door, I glimpsed a pleasant view over open water, with green growing things all over the place, soon blocked by a small figure coming in at speed. A moment later, Ayla was lying full length on top of me, sobbing. She sobbed and I quivered. The opening half hour was all about raising my core temp and getting her calmed down. We made a great team that way. Ayla was just what the doctor ordered as a way to raise my temperature, and using me as a mattress seemed to be good for what ailed her. During the bone-breaking shivering that hit its peak about 15 minutes in, she clung to me as if I were an amusement park ride and kept me from vibrating right off the bed. This kind of thing gave way, in due course, to other fascinating biological phenomena, which I can't set down here without turning this into a different kind of document. "Okay," she finally said. "I'll report to Fra Sildanik that you have excellent blood flow to all of your extremities." It was the first complete sentence that had come out of her mouth. We had been together for an hour and a half. I laughed. I was thinking heaven, but heaven wouldn't have these. I tugged gently at the hissing tube under her nose. She snorted and batted my hand away. "Oxygen from Arb?" I asked. "Obviously. How did it, and you, get here?" She sighed, seeing that I was determined to ask tedious questions. She pushed herself up, straddled me. I raised my knees, and she leaned back against them. Snatched a pillow, propped herself up, got comfortable, fiddled with her oxygen tube. She looked at me, and once again the "I'm in heaven" hypothesis floated to the top. But it couldn't be. You had to deserve heaven. "After you went up," she said, "the pedestal rotted all of our space launch infrastructure." "I'm aware of it." "Oh, yes, I forgot. You had a vantage point. So we got the message that they were extremely cross with us over the 200 missile launch. But they had fallen for the decoy, the inflatable thing you launched. They sent us detailed phototypes of the wreckage. Were they ever triumphant?" "Maybe they were only pretending to fall for it." "We considered that. But remember, a few days later, you guys were able to just walk right in."
"Well, it was a little more difficult than you make it sound." I was trying to laugh, but it was hard with her weight on my tummy.
"I get that," she said immediately. "But what I'm trying to say is..."
"The pedestal hadn't taken any extraordinary precautions," I agreed. "They were totally surprised."
"Yes. So, one moment, they are feeling triumphant. The next, out of nowhere, all of a sudden, their world burner has been wrecked. A bunch of their people are dead. One of the 12 vertices has been seized by Arbran commandos."
"Wow. The Veilers did all that?"
"They sneaked onto the world burner and planted 3 of the 4-shaped charges they had with them. Then they headed for a certain window."
"Pardon me, a window?"
"That vertex is a sort of command post and maintenance depot for all things world burner. There is a conference room with windows that look out over the bomb. Osa and company had a plan, apparently, to rendezvous there. Along the way, they were noticed and came under assault by the maintenance workers who were out there in spacesuits. But the workers didn't have weapons, per se."
"Neither did the Veilers," I said.
She gave me a sort of pitying look,
maybe with a trace of affection.
"Okay," I said. "Veilers don't need weapons. The Geometer's spacesuits are soft. Ours are hard. Just imagine."
"Okay," I said. "I'd almost rather not, but I can see how it would come out."
"Surveille died. She took on 5 guys, one of whom happened to be carrying a plasma cutter. It's a very unpleasant story. She and the 5 all ended up dead. But largely because of her intervention, the other 3 Veilers made it to that window." She paused for a moment, letting me absorb that. I had really hated Surveille when she had sewn me up after Masht, but when I remembered that picnic table surgery now, it made me want to cry.